You, sup? It's about Nothing. Freaking time.
Me?
Yeah.
I've been waiting on you.
I've been sitting in here listening to the waiting music for like freaking 2 whole minutes.
Yeah, it's a lit track. I'm sorry. I had to get more moonshine.
Dude, is that the picture you meant that you sent to us that didn't go through? I kind of figured it was something alcohol related, but.
Hey. Yo. What's up?
Mark's out here drinking some moonshine.
And reading a book.
Like a true freaking hick. Converted.
Wow. Is that all they have in
Been down in freaking Georgia for like...
Yeah. Georgia. That's all they got. Just
a few moonshine. Weeks. Now he's sipping on moonshine reading books. I don't even know you.
Just saying, if I'm going to do something that hurts me, I should do something that helps me too, right?
I guess.
Reading books?
Yeah.
Yeah,
what kind of books?
What kind of books? What kind of books are we talking?
It's called Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. It explains like the duality of like whenever we immediately jump to an answer we think we know because we have like experience in it versus when we like don't immediately know the answer, we consider like less serious questions as the answer. Like it goes into this thing about this guy who once bought stock in Ford. He was like a CEO of like a very large financial advisory, and he was talking about how like he went to a car show and saw Ford cars and was just like, these are nice cars, I'm gonna buy them. But they were wrongly informed because he didn't know like if Ford stock was undervalued. He wasn't like, are Ford stocks a good investment? Because he didn't know the answer to that. He reduced it to the question of do I like these cars? Yes.
So basically it's just talking about whether you actually make the right decision based off information or basically you just stumble upon correct answers.
Yeah. It also delves into like how bad we are at like mentally coming up with accurate statistics. Like if you said what percentage of people do this, or like he just gives a description of a person. He's like, is this person more likely be a librarian or a farmer? And he's like, you might've thought that like based on the attributes, this person should be a librarian. He's like, but there are 20 male librarians for every one male librarian. So, like, odds are he's going to be a farmer. And, like, we never consider that when we're, like, looking at personality traits, like, how likely it is or how many people are in, like, fields and stuff like that and form what we think they might become. We just kind of give kids jobs based on, like, the stereotypes they portray of, like, a certain field.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So are you going to be a lot more cautious on the pod, Mark?
No.
Or are you just going to just assume everything you say is right?
It's a valid question.
Boss man, he talks about chess masters who can look at a chessboard and estimate like how many moves the game's be over then, and they're overwhelmingly right. And I think that's what I am right now. I've reached such a high level of expertise in everything that we talk about. So I'm just like, boom.
You can predict what someone is going to say.
I can accurately
based predict, on what your opinion is.
I can accurately predict the future based solely on my opinion because it's that well informed.
It's impressive.
I know.
Oh, man, look at you reading books.
That's what I
like,
do.
Acting like you're smart now.
Oh, no, God, no. I would never.
I mean, he's also drinking moonshine, so
yeah.
Let's you really go too far, Tony.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I had to finish the book before I go blind from it. It's a race against time.
Oh, damn! Oh,
man. Well, we're Marshall-less today, so
yeah, Marshall Chalkness. Why does he have to work noon to midnight?
I don't know, but that sounds like the worst thing of all time.
That's crazy. Yeah,
I'm like, yeah. Where Marshall's like, I work 12 to 12. I'm like, does that mean he's working 12-hour shifts? Or does that mean he's actually working noon to midnight? And I already said that. I'm like, who does this to people?
Yeah. Where do you know where he's flying to?
No clue.
I don't know. But he's flying somewhere. Then he's working 12 to 12 shifts for the rest of the week, which that really sounds like the worst thing ever. But
that sounds just terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Well, All right. Are we going to talk about the NBA Finals now?
Yeah.
All right. Where do you want to start?
Oh, I want to start with something in particular I saw at the end of the first quarter.
Of game two?
Yeah, game two? Of game two.
All right, because I feel like we can discuss both games one and two.
Yeah, I actually didn't watch that much of game two. But
oh, okay. But in the end of the first quarter, I thought it was really funny because the Warriors had a Swaggy P, Sean Livingston, Curry, Looney Bell lineup out on the court, and they were using Steph Curry as the cutter. And I was like, what is – I'm like, he's like basically your only dependable shooter on the court. And they were using him as a cutter. However, they did.
Swaggy.
Yeah. 0-4 Swaggy from three P. in that game. From three, 0-5 overall. But yeah, but it was just ridiculous to me. I think sometimes Kerr. See, I understand.
He plays the weirdest lineups.
He does play some weird lineups sometimes.
Didn't they do like a really big lineup once? Like they played like.
They're
Clay, like Draymond, making like two centers with KD or something. I think they did that. Maybe that wasn't like in the Western Conference Finals, but I thought they did a lineup that was like huge, too.
I think they did do something like that, but it was for like a really short period of time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, he plays the weirdest lineups though. But sorry, go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, but I just thought like, so obviously it's very good that the Warriors don't ISO every possession, but. At the same time, I think Kerr's offense gets a little too cute and, like, idealistic in the sense that, like, yes, they scored because Sean Livingston bailed them out like a contested 18-footer.
Yeah, my guy Sean Livingston was killer from mid-range in game two. Yeah.
Has he missed a shot, automatic. Like, in the final, dude?
He's missed one.
No, he hasn't. Oh. I'm looking at it right now. He's 9 for 9.
4 for 5 in game one.
I'm looking at the basketball, at least according to Basketball Reference's series page, he is 9 for 9 in the series. And 2 for 2 MVP. From the free throw line. He has not missed a shot yet.
MVP.
No, but what were you saying, Mark? Do you have any more about that? Or
no, I just thought it was like...
He does play some weird lineups, though. Like, I agree. If I was the coach of the Warriors, I feel like I would always have at least Steph Curry or Kevin Durant on the floor.
Yeah.
Like I'm not even a super... I'm not even a really huge fan of, like, the Klay and Draymond lineups. Like I don't know, I just
yeah,
I don't know, I'm just not a huge fan of those either, but I mean they work because they're both also both really good, but I just feel like I would have one of those two out there all the time.
Yeah, and you would have two of those four guys I think out like all right. the time.
Yeah, so, but I just think he does the pairings weird is all.
Yeah, and like, then even in like the end of the game one, he didn't go with Livingston until overtime.
Yeah, what was that? Which
was really dumb, and then they blew them out in overtime. It's like, yeah. Well, why didn't you just do this lineup earlier?
Well, I think them getting blown out in that overtime had more with the absolutely deflating way that the game ended up in overtime. And I think the Cavs were just kind of like, as soon as that happened, I was like, there's no chance the Cavs are winning this game now. Like, as soon as J.R. Smith did that, I was like, this game's over. Like, they're not winning this. Yeah. Like, did you see that video? There was a video tweet out today of LeBron's reaction on the bench.
Oh, that 3-minute video. Oh,
when he found out that they still had a timeout left too, and he just immediately like put his head in his hands and just sat there for like a minute, and like they did like a hands in thing, and he like wasn't even about to do it. Ty Lue was like, "Come on, put your hand in." It's like he was also, he was just over it at that point. Like he was just like, "This is I can't believe this." Like,
yeah.
And not that I can blame him either. I mean, he really went for like 51, 10, and 10 or something. Like,
yeah.
I would kind of be pissed too.
That's so hard, though, to call a timeout with when they have 4 seconds left.
I think you're going to do blame that too much. I think you do as soon as you see JR bringing the ball out.
But you wouldn't do it as soon as you see him dribbling the ball. You'd do it like as soon as he got past the 3-point line, in which case there's like 2 seconds left.
And
he's probably not really in position to call a timeout because he wasn't, like, expecting to have to call a timeout. And the ball's on the far side of the court. So, like, I don't know. It's also, like, you have to, like, run over and get the ref's attention.
Yeah. I guess that's the best.
I mean, you could have tried.
I mean, that is
– Even if they did, I still think it's, like, 2 seconds left, maybe.
I do see that. But I kind of feel like as soon as you see – almost as soon as you see JR not immediately try and put that back up, you call a timeout. Like, and try and run, like, an out-of-timeout play. But
yeah.
But did you see like that shot where like JR gets the rebound, turns, and then LeBron just wide open at the top of the 3-point line?
Yeah, I think it's so, like, I think as soon as he doesn't shoot it or pass it, like as soon as he's clearly not doing anything, because it was like fairly obvious, like he just turned and immediately sprinted. Like it was like kind of obvious he had no plans to do anything with that ball but hold it.
Yeah,
that might be like hindsight, me seeing it and be like, that's obviously what he was doing, but it kind of seemed like he had no intention of passing or shooting that ball the whole time. And I mean, there's like 5 whole seconds. I mean, I know it's like not a lot, but like it kind of is at the same time. And it's like, I just feel like he should have at some point realized that he's not doing something he should be doing right now. I should probably call a timeout. It's like,
yeah. I also love JR's excuse where he was like, I was trying to dribble it out to get a shot or something.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Did he say that? Why did he not just own it? I don't understand. Like,
yeah.
Well, just be like, I thought we were up by one and be done with it.
Yeah.
Like, that looks way better. Like,
well, he could say he's trying to dribble it out to get a shot, but then he has to admit he didn't know how much time was left, which is the same thing.
Yeah. He either didn't know the score or he didn't know how much time was left. Yeah. I think it's more, and it's like you can kind of see him mouth it afterwards.
Yeah, that's
when LeBron's like, "What are you doing?" And then he's like, "You can kind of see him mouth, I thought we were up."
Yeah,
but
well, this isn't the first time J.R. Smith has done this. On the Knicks,
he shot up a three.
Yeah, right? They're up two with like 20 seconds left, and all you had to do is get fouled, and he like jacked a three, and then whoever they were playing came down and made a three, and ended up losing. Like all he had to do is take the foul. So
you go to college.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just gonna say that too. That was the that was the stupidest take I've ever seen.
Yeah.
If he would have went to North Carolina, this wouldn't have happened. It's like, are you kidding me? Like for real?
Yeah. J.R. Smith is basically Michael Jordan if Michael Jordan skipped college.
Exactly.
Same skill set.
Dude, could you imagine? Like you said, I don't know if you said it, Mark, but I saw somebody say this, like LeBron would be 8-0 if he just went to Ohio State.
Yeah.
If he went to Ohio State for a year, he'd be 8-0 in finals.
So he'll skip the process.
Yeah.
But
what a stupid take that was.
Because we all know you get better at basketball if during your most formative years of playing, 19, 20, 21, you're spending 2 hours a day doing it instead of 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
It makes you much better.
Yeah, and college is also known to be a place where people tend to be super responsible and learn a lot of and be like and mature very much, like especially a freshman when you're a full ride scholarship athlete.
I'm sure
he'd have done a lot of maturing in that 1 or 2 years or whatever would have liked him to go to.
At North Carolina, you know, he's gonna definitely be taking where all of like, his classes.
Yes, seriously, where they're notorious for
100% serious. No messing around.
Man. What a great argument.
Wait. Tony, I want to bring up something you said a little earlier because it's something I've thought a lot about.
Okay.
With you saying the Warriors should keep two of the big four on the court at all times, what's the ideal mix of two players? Because
I think I would go Steph and Draymond and KD and Klay.
You don't think Klay gets like decently marginalized by the fact that the best two passers are on the other lineup? Because that's
what probably true. Never mind.
I'm like, you don't want to go two guards and two forwards, but you also don't want to, like...
That is true.
And you don't want to use Katie and Steph. I think the best thing to do is what they've been doing recently.
Yeah, that might be true.
Yeah, I kind of, like...
really think about it, but...
Yeah, I kind of like going just KD and then going Steph, Klay, and Draymond.
That's actually kind of interesting, too.
Because that's what they've done, like, the last couple games, and I think it's worked, like, pretty well.
Yeah.
Because you're pretty much like, we're going to put a bunch of defense next to KD, just kind of let him go to work, because KD can kind of prop up a mediocre to slightly above average offense by himself by basically isolating every possession. And then you're like, we'll put the other three in and let them play like how we're supposed to play.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I was kind of thinking of like the just split the two guards and forwards up. But I don't know. I guess that does make sense that the Klay doesn't get optimized without one of the two best passers on the team. That is a good point. I really didn't think of it that way. But
yeah, because I've actually been thinking about that a lot. I was like, if you want to go the Brent Brown route where you, like, keep two starters on the court at all times, I was like, I'm not sure how you do that with the Warriors.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I do kind of think they might be best, like you said, just having the Steph, Klay, Draymond lineup where they just play like they played before KD got there. And then just having KD do whatever.
KD come off the bench.
Yeah.
Six man. That makes sense. Yeah, let's do that.
Give him the Lou Will treatment. Where he sits the first 5 minutes of each half and then doesn't come out again.
Also, I am not 100% convinced the Warriors' best offense isn't just Steph recklessly dribbling around in circles for 20 seconds and then jacking up a shot. You can't convince me otherwise because he just seems to be really good at doing that. And that three he made over Kevin Love last night was absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know how something like that goes in.
See, you know what the funny thing is to me? If you just looked at Russell Westbrook and Steph Curry's shooting and athletic profile, you would think Steph Curry would be the one who never fucking passes. Because he can make any shot in the world. He, like, after he hit that three where, like, he dribbled the ball off his ass and then just, like, picked up and was like, I'll fling this 30-footer over Kevin Love. I was like, I would never pass a basketball again.
Yeah.
And then you see Russell Westbrook, who can't shoot but can, like, consistently draw a triple team at the rim. And you're like, that guy should be passing, like, anytime he gets a half step. And the lane's not, like, wide open, yet we kind of see, like, them doing the opposite things. I just think that's a little funny.
Yeah, that's true. Do we have any hope for the Cavaliers taking a game at this point?
They could take a game.
Because, I mean, it hasn't felt like... I mean, last night ended up being a blowout, but it didn't seem like they were, like... They were close.
4 points in the third, yeah. I think, was the closest
they got. For like a decent bit, but it never really felt like the Warriors were in danger of like losing that game.
No,
but I mean they've like kind of kept it close the first two games. Like I said, I mean the Warriors kind of blew it out in the fourth quarter in game two.
Yeah, but it just doesn't seem like the Cavs can get a stop.
Yeah,
yeah.
The Warriors are just getting so many good shots, but
and I mean I don't know if the Cavaliers are going to get another game one type performance from LeBron. Like, I don't know, that was like kind of the one of the most like perfect offensive performances I've seen from a player ever. Like, I just don't know if you're going to get that to that level again. Like,
I'm not putting it past him.
I mean, he might.
I don't think he's going to do it 4 out of 5 games, but
I mean, dude, like a 50, what did he end up with? Dude, he had a 51, 8-8, shot 19 of 32 and 3 of 7 from 3 and 10 of 11 from the free throw line. Like, I just really don't know. Like, it's not that I don't think LeBron is, like, capable. Like, he's definitely capable of doing it, but that's, like, a really impressive thing to do. Like, that doesn't happen, like, ever. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't really have much. I mean, if Cleveland does get one, I feel like it might be game three. But, I don't know. It just kind of seems like they're. I just feel like game one was really their chance, and then J.R. Smith happened. And I just feel like they're done. Like, they're just out of it, honestly.
Oh, Cleveland's kind of shot like shit.
They have.
With all due respect, the Warriors are doing a great job just fully committing to running them off the line. But, like, the open threes they get and those, like, one dribble to the side and, like, pull-up threes are, like, semi-open. Like, you would think some more of those are falling.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like they're definitely going to shoot a little better. Definitely at home, they're going to shoot better. But they just, like, haven't been able to get, like... Well, J.R. Smith is, like... Apparently, I saw somebody tweet out, like, his stats that he's, like, a notorious, like, dud in the first two games of a series, and then he has, like, a decent games, like, 3, 4, and 5 or whatever. But, so, I don't know if he'll actually end up rebounding, but apparently he does, and I just can't believe they can't get anything going for, like, Kyle Korver.
I mean, I can.
I mean, yeah, I guess I can, but it's, like, the dude's taken 6 shots the whole entire series. Like, I mean, I guess he's not really... athletic enough to create space for himself against the Warriors, but I don't know. And Jordan Clarkson's been an absolute disaster, and I just don't even understand how he's still getting minutes. But
yeah, that's just
the most hilarious part about Jordan Clarkson being garbage is the Cavs still have 2 years, $26 million left on his contract. So,
Shout out Magic Johnson. Best front office mind in the NBA.
And they had to give up a first-round pick for him.
Well,
I had Nance, I guess.
But. Yeah. Well, I think the deal was originally, like, the first rounder for Nance. And the Cavs are sending back, like, Ante Zizic or something. And then Blake was like, no, if we're trading Nance, we want to get off money, too. And the Cavs like, fine.
Yeah, that's – honestly, like, at the time, I thought their trade deadline was actually, like, kind of all right. But it looks like, honestly, like, just have, like, if they had Dwayne Wade on this team, I mean, not that he would do much better, but, like, you don't have to play Jordan Clarkson then. Not that Dwayne Wade is, like, some super, like, problem solver for this team, but he's got to be better than Jordan Clarkson, right?
Were we talking Miami Dwayne Wade or Cleveland Dwayne Wade?
That is true.
True.
But
also, like, you don't need to play Jordan Clarkson. Like, I just feel like Ty Lue shouldn't be playing him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's not even like the trade was bad. It's like you could just play Rodney Hood instead, and I feel like I wouldn't be.
Yeah. Did you see that Rodney Hood headline the other day?
Oh, that shit was so embarrassing.
That was like the most depressing thing I've ever heard
What was it?
He said he's been watching highlights from when he was on Utah this season to remind himself that he's good. But I just don't understand how he what played 4 minutes last or in game two.
Yeah,
in like garbage time.
I'm assuming those garbage time.
Four garbage time minutes, and it's like just throw him out there. He really can't be any worse than Jordan Clarkson.
Right? Yeah.
He cannot be. He can't.
I've been saying that about him and Chetty Osmond. I'm like, I get neither of these guys are good, but they're at least 6'8". They can at least put up the appearance of playing defense, and they at least can attempt a catch and shoot jumper, because Jordan Clarkson gets the ball wide open. He's like, well, I can't shoot unless I've dribbled three times.
Yeah.
And they also probably won't shoot eight times in 3 minutes.
Yeah. Dude, that's what Tom Haberstroh tweeted out last night. Last night, Jordan Clarkson got his first assist since game 4 of the Toronto series.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah.
What was 120 minutes?
It was 100 and some minutes. I don't know I can't remember the exact number, but it was 120, 130 some minutes that he went without an assist.
Baller.
It's I just don't understand. Rodney Hood has to be better than this. I don't care how deep in how deep in the doghouse he is. You have to do something. You can't continue playing Jordan Clarkson.
Yeah.
They have. I feel like people have been saying this since the game one or something in Boston. Yeah, but he just keeps playing, so apparently that's what they're going with. I don't know.
Apparently.
Yeah. It's just kind of sad that, this is who LeBron's got.
Yeah, no, for real.
Heavily depending on Jeff Green is so terrible. I feel so... Because it's Jeff Green can't shoot, and the possessions he shoots really hurt you. But also those possessions where he gets the ball wide open in the corner, and then he's stares at the hoop for 3 seconds and attempts a straight line drive into Draymond Green. Those also really kill you. They don't show up on the stat sheet the same way. I remember last year when the Thunder were playing the Rockets in the playoffs, Andre Robertson was 3 of 5 from 3 in a game, and someone was oh, he'll never do this again. The Thunder are done. I'm like, yes, he's 3 of 5 from 3. There have been 8 other possessions where he caught the ball wide open from 3 and just stood there. And those also crippled the Thunder. So even 3 from 5 from 3 has actually deceptively hurt them.
Yeah.
And now I'm starting to see the same thing with Jeff Green, where I'm like, wow, he's missing shots. And even when he gets the ball, it's not he's always shooting. He's killing possessions in other new and ingenuitive ways.
He's being creative in the ways in which he is actively hurting a team.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but it's really sad. I think Kevin Love, I feel has definitely been their second best player, and I still feel even he hasn't been great.
No.
He's missed so many wide open threes, and it's just
especially in game one.
Yeah. I mean, his almost 22 and 12 or whatever he's averaging looks nice, but he's just not hitting open shots or anything.
Yeah.
And then
they're just going after him on defense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Tristan Thompson's being out rebounded by Steph Curry again. And I don't know. It's just not great for the Cavs right now. This is really LeBron James versus the Warriors at this point.
Yeah. Cool. All right. I wanted to ask a question about Kevin Love. So I've noticed this playoffs and a little bit in last year's finals that Kevin Love misses really badly on his post ups, his hook shots. I feel a lot of the time when he posts up, he ends up just basically throwing the ball at the backboard. I don't know if anyone's noticed this, but his misses are bad misses.
He had a good game one, I think, posting up.
But more of that was face up. He only posted up a couple times.
He had a couple
shoulder. I vaguely remember him hitting a couple post up hook shots in game one. But
I think he hit 2 or 3. But whenever he misses them, it's they don't look like they're going in. You can kind of tell whenever he takes a shot whether or not it's going in. They're super awkward and very strong, and it just looks really bad, I think, too.
Yeah. I don't know. What are you trying? Are you asking whether or not this is a new development for Kevin Love, or
are you saying LeBron playing with LeBron has ruined Kevin Love?
Yes,
that's what I'm saying. I actually feel like it had, like, I feel like if he would have just stayed on, like, a consistently, like, mediocre team and put up big numbers, we would look at Kevin Love in a way different light than what we look at him
now. Yeah, we'd look at him as, like, a not as athletic Charles Barkley, pretty much. Yeah. He stayed in Minnesota putting, like, 25-12-4 and just, like, never winning. You'd be like, yeah, that's a new Charles Barkley.
Yeah, being put in, like, a winning situation in which he has to, like, actually perform in games that matter and is also happens to be a crazy matchup problem against the team that they face in the finals every single year has really, yeah. really hurt Kevin Love's career and how we look at him.
Yeah. Something I've always thought about, like, Kevin Love is, what is his ideal team? Like, what's the best lineup you could put around, like, a player like Kevin Love?
It's like, probably, it's really hard in, like, today's NBA, just the way what big men have to do now.
Yeah. Because, like, it's like, you kind of want a center forward combo next to him. You want, like, a dynamic point guard that can play pick and pop. I guess you want a lot of cutters because he used to be a good passer from the elbows. But when he used to get the ball at the elbows. But yeah. Like,
and, like, almost yeah. everybody else in that lineup has to be an above average defender.
Yeah.
It's like you said,
you have to have a rim protector
play with
yeah.
him.
Yeah, but mm-hmm. I don't know if he could really play the four.
Yeah, it's kind of tight. You have to have, like, a rim protecting four to play with him. And it's been quite unfortunate that the way the NBA has evolved for Kevin Love. That's just mm-hmm. that's really yeah. the only way to put it, honestly.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why everyone was tossing out the Bogey for Love trades at the beginning of the season, because, like, Anthony Davis is one of, like, the four players yeah. in the league. They could yeah. probably
yeah,
do an okay job. Yeah. Plus, he would have been, like, a rich man's Mirotić this year.
Basically. And,
I mean, Mirotić really saved their season after Boogie went down.
Yeah, Mirotić was balling for a while, dude.
Yeah.
It was kind of wild.
You just get so many easy looks whenever Anthony Davis is pulling out all that attention to the rim.
Yeah.
And you can't really, like, tag Anthony Davis as, like, a shooting guard. You kind of have to pull the four man in.
Yeah, I guess slotting him next to Anthony Davis is the optimal the optimal thing for Kevin Love to be in.
Yeah. Because at first I was like, maybe he'd be really good next to Al Horford, and you could do, like, a lot of pistol action and a lot of horn sets and stuff like that. Then I'm like, Al Horford's not really, like, a rim protector. He's yeah. a better, like, switch guy than a rim protector. And I was like, but then that kind of leaves Kevin Love back. And he's definitely not a switch defender.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It's just the fact that he can't protect the rim and he also can't switch at the same time is really, like, the most detrimental thing to a big man's game in the NBA in 2018. And
yeah, he'd really have to play in, like, a drop scheme with, like, yeah. a rim protecting center.
Yeah, you really have to be able to do either one of the two as a big guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he cannot do either. He
can't do either.
Which is not great for him.
Yeah. And even if it's one of those things where, like, it's fine in the regular season, like Yusuf Nurkic was. Yusuf Nurkic is fine against, like, 22 teams in the NBA.
Yeah, that's...
But, yeah.
I also feel like it's not the biggest deal in the world either if the Cavs aren't playing the Warriors in the finals every year.
If they're playing the Rockets,
it's not great either. But
yeah, well, all right, fine. If they're playing, like, the 6th seed in the West,
okay, that's what. Okay. Kevin Love is, like, also an effective player against, like, 20 some other teams in the league, though.
Yeah, but the Cavs aren't playing to beat 20 some.
I know that's the part that sucks. But I'm saying it's, like, a similar thing to Yusuf Nurkic is what I was trying to say.
Uh-huh. And it's just on Golden State,
and it's just I feel like Yusuf Nurkic doesn't get, like, as much hate as Kevin Love does because we haven't seen Yusuf Nurkic get torched by Golden State in the finals, like, 4 years in a row.
I don't know. Basketball Twitter was lighting him up because, like, a lot of analytics guys were like, you know, Portland's had, like, a top, what, 5 or 7 defense this year?
Yeah. Didn't
they were top 5.
People were putting, like, Yusuf Nurkic on, like, their defensive player of the year ballots. Like, I saw
this. Yeah, exactly. And, like, there are a lot of very good defensive centers in the league.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, like...
I don't know. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, Kevin Love was not on the Cavaliers and wasn't expected to be able to defend the Warriors every year. Yusuf Nurkic is not good at has the same similar problems as Kevin Love defensively. And Yusuf Nurkic probably is going to receive Defensive Player of the Year votes this year. Like, that's ridiculous.
Did he even receive Defensive Player of the Year votes?
I saw people put him in their top five. I actually saw people do this.
I think David Thorpe was talking about putting him third after him beating Gobert.
I guarantee you he is in the received like, because how many people do they list for Defensive Player of the Year? How many people?
You just do your top three.
Your top three. Well, then he might not get any, but if it was five, I bet he would get some. I didn't look at the all defensive team ones, but I bet he would. I'm actually about to look that up. See if he got any. See how many votes he got for all defensive teams, because those are actually out.
Yeah. Well, I guess the thing is, like, he's pretty solid in a drop scheme against, like, a non-dynamic center.
It's also a regular season award, too, so.
Yeah. And you don't really make, like, and it's like defensive adjustments in the regular season.
Yeah. Because, like, if it was, like, if they had to play the Pelicans every game, like, obviously he's going to look terrible. Same with, like, against the Warriors, but I don't know. Just as, like, a overall, like, I guess he could make the argument.
Yeah.
Because they were really good this year, and they don't really – I guess, like, Aminu, he's probably better defensively than Nurkic, but
– Yeah. He was actually getting some talk for, like, all defensive teams this year.
All right. Well, apparently that was just a Twitter thing because I don't actually think he got any defensive team votes. But I swear I saw people talking about that on Twitter. About Yusuf Nurkic, but I'm looking at it now and I don't see him.
He had crazy good rim protection numbers this year.
Yeah. But I swear, it must have been people tweeting about it who don't actually have votes, which I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But I swear I did see it. But yeah, he doesn't. There's a handful of other Portland guys, like Ed Davis is on here, Al-Farouq Aminu is on here.
Is getting all defensive team votes?
Damian Lillard got one.
Damian Lillard got one?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The others receiving votes in all award voting is, or like the team especially defense. Voting is all fun, is always hilarious. But
defense is always kind of strange, too, because people don't really like have stats, so they're just randomly put guys.
Remember when Bill Simmons voted for Austin Rivers last year?
Yeah, I do.
For all defensive team?
He did.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Because he had Clipper season tickets.
That's what, like, half the people, like, probably half the media guys just vote for the teams they follow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they watch all 82
they watch
of their games.
All the time. Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, oh, he's sneaky good at this. Not realizing that there's one or two players on every team who you can say that about.
Yep.
That's like Doc Rivers just getting all the players that had good games against him.
Yeah.
As GM.
That's really my favorite thing ever.
Yeah. It's kind of ridiculous how, like, true that kind of is. Like, it shouldn't be, but it, like, actually is kind of true.
I think Doc Rivers got, like, 8 or 9 players who scored at least 30 points against him in a game. Like, traded for them and signed them in free agency.
Yeah.
Oh, and his son.
And his son, yeah. You either have to have had a really good game against Doc Rivers or
be
his
related
kid.
To him.
I don't know. Do you guys have anything else you guys wanted to mention or talk about with the finals?
Do we want to start talking about where LeBron goes?
Or actually, here, I actually want to say, who do you guys think is who do you guys think is the front runner for finals MVP at this point? It has to be, I think it has to be Steph.
J.R. Smith.
Wait, right, what do we say?
Sure. Yeah, finals MVP.
Yeah, as of right now, it's Steph.
If
I don't know, Warriors crowd seemed into J.R. Smith then.
What needs to happen in order for LeBron James to be the first ever Finals loser to win the Finals MVP, or is it just not going to happen?
I don't think it's going to happen.
Wait, didn't either Jerry West or Elgin Baylor do it?
All right, well then he might not be the first. I might have lied about that, but one of the first, the rare. The ultra rare happening of him, of the loser winning Finals MVP.
I might be wrong about that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but I don't know what needs to happen in this series for that to even be a possibility.
He basically, Jerry West won it when they lost.
Okay,
actually, the first year that they did this.
Oh, really? The first ever Finals MVP was on a losing team?
Yeah, because 68-69. I want to say Elgin Baylor retired 71-72, which is when the Lakers won and Wilt Chamberlain won it.
Yeah. So, okay, so the second player ever to be a losing finals MVP. Does he have to, like, take it to six and, like, average, like, 40-10-10 for the whole series?
I don't think they would give it to him.
I think it's more than that. Yeah. I kind of think it has to be a combination of LeBron averaging basically a 40-point triple-double and all of the Warriors stars underperforming.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. With Steph playing so well,
yeah, it's not
Can't, like, if nobody on the Warriors was really, like, having, like, a standout performance this finals, like, I could kind of see it. But because Steph is playing so well, I just don't think you can give it to the loser. But it would make so much sense for them to give it to LeBron this year just so they don't give Steph Curry a finals MVP. Like, I'm just convinced, like, Steph's never going to get one. It'll be, like, the one thing in his career he doesn't accomplish.
I don't know.
He never gets a finals MVP, which would be kind of hilarious, but at the same time, kind of messed up.
It's kind of been a storyline, like, this entire season, though. So yeah. I kind of think if he had played just as well as Kevin Durant, he would have gotten it. But through two games, I think he's pretty clearly been better than Kevin Durant.
Yeah. Kevin Durant was super good in game two, but I actually didn't think Kevin Durant was very good in game one.
No, he wasn't.
So, yeah, also, I definitely think it's Steph at this point. But yeah. And I don't know. I just don't really think you can give it to the loser of the finals.
Yeah. It's just like the record of – or like what you said – the first year they gave it to the losing team, but it's been like, what, 30 years in a row that they give it to the winning team. It's almost just
also,
people just assume it just goes to the winning team now.
Yeah. I think the year Jerry West won it, the Lakers lost in seven. He had like a 42-point triple double in game seven.
I actually do think that was the case.
He put up like 42, 15, and 12 in a game seven loss. And they were just like, well, come on. Like,
I think if there's somehow like a narrative where like the Cavaliers blew like another two games, maybe like if J.R. Smith like blew game one, that's what everyone was saying. So if he somehow blew like two more games, then maybe you could conceive of it. But then like if game two where like Steph went off and like they clearly won, if something like that happened in the next two games, then it's not going to happen.
Yeah. I also like that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I also love the idea that people try and make up that Steph like hasn't been good in the finals the last few years.
Isn't he averaging like 27-6-6 on like really good shooting?
Yeah. Like in 2014-15 when Andre Iguodala won it, he averaged 28 five boards and 6.5 assists, two steals, shot 45% from the field and 42% from three.
While getting double teamed basically every time he ran a pick and roll.
Yeah, didn't win it there. And then people said he had a not good finals in 2015-16, which it was worse than the one before, but he still averaged 25, 5.5 boards and 5 assists and a steal and a half. He did only shoot 43.8% and 40% from three that year. But it's like, I don't know where this narrative of Steph has underperformed in the finals thing kind of comes from. Because like even last year, he averaged 28-6-7 and two steals.
It's come from that one game where he went 5-22 against Delhi.
Yeah, I don't
know. Exactly that one game.
I guess. Like, I don't know. There's like this weird thing. Like, I saw, I think it was, who was it? Oh, Sam Esfandiari tweeted out like a screenshot of an article today that said like Steph has been like pedestrian in recent finals. And it's like, wait, what? Like, what are you talking about? Like,
Steph has like across the board better playoffs and finals numbers than Kobe Bryant. And Kobe Bryant is, I am told, the most clutch player in NBA history. So,
yeah,
someone's math isn't adding up.
Yeah, no, I just always have found it weird that there's this narrative that Steph has like been bad in the finals recently. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's because he doesn't ISO 15 times a game, right?
I guess.
Like,
Always think Steph gets underrated just because he's not like a traditionally dominant player. I really think that's why. It's like he's not like a Shaq or like a LeBron, so people like don't see it as the same. Mm-hmm. Because he's like a small, like 6'3", skinny dude who shoots a bunch. so it's different, and like their brains can't accept it as also being good.
Mm-hmm. He hasn't had like a big like clutch game at all either. Maybe I don't know if that would contribute to it at all.
I don't know.
But
I
like guess. The only like clutch play that people remember is the one where he missed the shot over Kevin Love.
I guess that also is true.
So if you would have made that would reverse our entire opinion based on 24 NBA Finals games.
Pretty much.
Potentially.
That's insanity. I fucking hate people.
Okay, I mean... wait. No. I was actually reading his overall playoff stats from the last few years, but it's still also good in the finals, I'll just say.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the 2015 Finals, like, I don't know. I don't even remember that because I didn't watch that final that much. But Iguodala won.
Yeah.
So it's, right, I guess like no one was really dominant. 2016. So people just assume he underperformed because he wasn't dominant, even though he won so easily.
He put up his regular season numbers. Yeah. Despite getting trapped endlessly on pick and rolls.
And right, no, yeah.
Also, like, he won MVP that year. He put up his MVP regular season numbers in the finals. And people were like, no, that's not
he was 26. He averaged 26, 5, and 6, and 2 steals in the finals in 2015.
On pretty 26, good shooting.
Yeah. It was, well, let me see.
In retrospect, how the hell did Iguodala win MVP?
Because he guarded LeBron James. That's 100% why. But he shot 44% from the field, 38.5% from three. 2016 finals, he actually wasn't that great. It was like 22, 5, and 4. He only shot 40% from the field, 40% from three. So I guess... that one, I guess you actually have an argument there, but I mean, 2015 he was good. In 2017 he averaged 27, 8, and 9.
Not bad. I mean, it's also like
he was.
Like, people expect you to step your game up in the finals, so if you average the same as what you did in the regular season, that's like considered underperforming.
I guess, but like, the only one, the
not
only
by
one
James Harden standards.
All right. Yeah, James Harden has sucked in the finals, right?
I'm in the finals.
One finals performance, and he sucked, so...
Yeah, the only Steph Curry year that deserves any type of slander in the finals is that 2016 year. Every other year, he has been very good in the finals. But let's also not forget that LeBron in, what year was that, 2011, where he averaged like... Or 2010, where he averaged like 17.
2011, I think. Yeah. The year the Mavs won.
Yeah, he averaged like 17 points a game for a full finals.
Yeah.
He put up like 4 points.
He has never shed that reputation.
Nope.
The Mavs really played a 2-3 zone. They played a fucking zone. They won the NBA Finals like 5 years ago.
Yeah, that was the 2011 Finals. He averaged 18 points a game, 7 rebounds, and 7 assists.
Mm-hmm. J.J. Barea, the original LeBron stopper.
Yes.
Before Boris Diaw became the LeBron stopper.
Man.
Yeah. Dude, I lived for when Boris Diaw was guarding LeBron in the finals. That was the greatest.
That was fantastic.
Dude, it was so funny. He gave LeBron legitimately 6 feet of space. It was just like, you can shoot the jumper, but you're going to have to literally run through me to like get a layup. And he was like, that was fat Boris Diaw days, so...
Yeah.
Wasn't that easy to get through him. He was packing. It's like 6'8", 250, and not, like, muscular.
Yeah. See, Boris Diaw has the NBA career that I would aspire to have. He came into the league as, like, this elite athlete, like, shooting guard, finished his career as a, like, pudgy center.
Center.
Oh. Yeah. Well, do you remember that everyone thought he was Magic Johnson 2.0?
Yeah, apparently that was a thing. Right?
And yeah, they were right.
Yeah,
you're right.
And they
played all five positions in his career.
Yeah, he just slowly transitioned as he put on weight.
Yep.
I also love the story about him maxing out the Vertimax.
Yeah,
in Phoenix training or like the Phoenix draft day training.
Yeah.
Shows up in like sandals with a latte, and he's like, "What the fuck is that?" And they're like, "That's the Vertimax." He's like, "Has anyone ever cleared it?" And they're like, "Just Amari." And they like put down his latte, took off his sandals, and cleared it on the first try. Like, what a freak.
What a beast. He's really my hero.
Yeah.
I don't know. But what do we want to – do we think this is a sweep? Or are we still giving the Cavs a game? We all picked 5 going in.
Oh, yeah.
We still get the 5? We think they get 1 at home?
It's hard to say.
Yeah, I might as well just stick to 5. Yeah. What do you guys think – how many games – does Cleveland need to win for there to be a chance that LeBron comes back next year to Cleveland?
I don't think it matters if they win three games. I think he's gone.
Even if they take it to seven, he's still gone?
Yes, absolutely.
If they win, is he still gone?
If he wins, I think he has to run it back for one more year.
Yeah, if he wins, if he somehow wins, he'll come back, I guess. But I honestly just the whole entire I feel like as soon as J.R. Smith did that, and then that whole entire thing with that thing, I feel like at that moment he was like, "Yeah, I'm out of here. Like I am for sure out of here."
I think he's been gone since.
I think he's been gone too, but I think that like that sealed it. Like. Nail in the coffin. He's like, I'm out of here. There, I can't deal with this crap anymore.
Look, I'm just saying, KD's putting up some hints that he might want to leave. LeBron and KD can reunite on the Lakers. They can trade for Kawhi.
Yo, I totally thought that might be a possibility if the Warriors had lost
to the Rockets.
I totally thought that might be a possibility.
I mean, to be fair, I'm like 90% sure KD stays, but he does not look like he's having fun right now.
Yeah,
I don't know if he's just like laser focused or like pissed at Steph's team again. But like,
hey, what are the odds that like KD gets bored and is just like, yeah, I don't want to play here anymore? And like I don't know, what point do you think it gets that if it ever gets that? Do you think that's like a thing that could happen? Like
3 years away.
I think if they ever got to a point where like they just like can't afford the team or something, or they can't afford to pay him like that much.
Because isn't there like a scenario in which the Warriors, like if they continue to pay everybody, they're going to have like a $400 million luxury tax, because it like compounds like every year or whatever. So it's like,
but that's 4 years away.
The repeater penalty.
Yeah, when you get in the repeater and everything. But
yeah, but apparently with their new arena, like Joe Lacob is currently saying that that will not be a problem, and he will not like let a star walk away because of money. Also, they're already targeting Anthony Davis to come in and replace Draymond Green.
To replace Draymond.
If that actually happens,
why replace him? Just add a new guy.
I'm just saying, if in 2 years or like next season, the Warriors trade Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, or maybe just Draymond Green, some other stuff for Anthony Davis, I will be the least surprised person in the world.
Dude, if that actually happens, people are already saying the Warriors have ruined the league.
Dude, you guys know this has been a thing for like 3 years, right?
I know. I've heard about this for a while, but it's like just the idea of it actually happening is just people will be so heated.
Yeah. So maybe heated. they get Andre Iguodala's $6 million guaranteed on his last year. They get that off the books. They get Draymond off the books. They get Sean Livingston's $2 million guaranteed off the books. Send him down. Bring up Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis, Jordan Bell, KD, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry.
God damn.
Whoa. Jordan Bell's the backup to Looney. Come on.
Yeah. Act like Looney's not going to take money this summer.
Yeah. Act like some random team's not going to throw Looney like a stupidly big contract because he had like a decent conference finals.
So I have a question. Do we think Looney's actually good enough to be like an eighth man on a finals team? Or do we think
is he not factually an eighth man on a finals team right now?
Yeah, but it's like an unusually depleted bench. Like they have five centers in two series where they can't play centers.
I mean,
I'm saying like
up until like this year, I kind of thought he was like a lost cause. So, I mean, I guess he's better than what I anticipated him being, but I don't know. I think this is kind of a product of the situation he's in, but I mean, maybe he can be like a rotation guy.
Like, I'm just saying, besides getting not absolutely killed in switch defense and kind of being able to keep up with more athletic big men, and like, those aren't even strengths. Those are just things he's slightly above average at.
Yeah.
Like, what else is he good at? Because he looks like a deer in headlights every time he touches the basketball.
Yeah.
He's not a particularly good rebounder or rim protector. He's not like a dynamic role guy. He's not a lob threat. I'm just like, besides playing within himself and being like a kind of hustle guy, like what does he really bring to the team?
I mean, nothing really.
He doesn't really kill you.
Yeah, he doesn't make mistakes. So, and that's why Kerr plays him.
Yeah. He's not also, like doesn't have like huge flaws other than he just can't do anything on offense, but that's not like
that's a huge flaw.
That's a pretty big flaw, man.
I mean, it is, but when you have four of the best players, you just don't pass it to them, and then it's like whatever.
Yeah, but that happened in the Rocket series a couple times. They're late in games because Looney was in for reasons that will always confuse me. Yeah. They would like throw him the ball and he would just like those games, those two close games, I think if Looney wasn't catching those outlet passes, like,
well, that's why, that's how Iguodala probably,
yeah,
would have been in obviously for him.
But it would just look bad.
Yeah. But I mean, in terms of an eighth guy, he could probably be an eighth guy just because he's not going to like kill you that badly.
Yeah.
And as like a center, being able to catch the ball and do something isn't really that important.
I mean, at least
like it's like a flaw, but it's not like
at least being a lob threat or like a guy that can set a decent screen helps, and he can't do either of those.
Yeah, I kind of genuinely don't know what he does can do offensively.
Nothing.
Like I feel like every time he's scored, it's been because of like an offensive rebound or somebody literally like dumped it off to him.
Yeah,
right under the basket.
Right under the basket. Like I've never actually seen him do anything offensively.
He's not an above the rim player either, which is
yeah,
like, yeah. But
do you guys have any takes on the officiating?
No,
because people complain about that.
Do we want to talk about that one call in game one?
The block charge.
What's the official rule? Can only review it if you think he was on the line, and then once you're reviewing it, you can change it.
You can change it no matter what.
But you can't be like if it was just like a block charge at midcourt, you couldn't review it.
You could not review it. According to Brian Windhorst, you can review block charge calls if there is a question of whether or not they're in the restricted area or not in the final 2 minutes of game. In the final 2 minutes. Hmm. And I guess they decided that it was questionable whether or not he was inside the restricted area. And once you go to review it, you can
overturn it,
I guess. And I understand that's kind of stupid.
Yeah, I think that rule's kind of stupid. But
if it is kind of stupid, but if our main concern is getting the call right, and then I think they did.
They absolutely did.
But I understand being outraged that it's even a thing that they can review, but the call was ended up being right.
Yeah,
I thought it was close. I don't think it was that obvious.
No, LeBron was still moving.
He was still moving.
And he can still be moving, though. He can still be moving. You don't have to be, like, dead stop.
Yeah, but the offensive player then has to, like, lower his shoulder or do something of, like, excessive force or, like, push off. Like, if it's a natural collision and the defender is moving, it's a foul on the defense. LeBron was still moving his body and his feet. Like, he was turning his shoulders.
Yeah. I also just think charges are stupid in general. You're not even playing real defense at that point. You're just standing in front of people and hoping they run into you.
I think like Danny LaRue has said that, where they should just get rid of the off-ball defender being able to jump in front, which I kind of agree. It's like a dumb rule.
It's not real defense.
And there's much greater chance of injury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I mean, I guess I understand the outrage of them being even able to do that. I do get that. But I mean,
is that only in the last 2 minutes?
I believe
at any point in the game.
I believe it's only in the last 2 minutes.
But can't you review if they're on the line any time?
You can review a foul to see if it's like a flagrant or a flagrant two. Or you can review a ball that went out of bounds, but you can't review to like.
But I thought you could review like in the third quarter if there's a block charge, you could review whether his foot was on the little circle. Can't you review that any time?
I actually don't know.
I'm actually not entirely sure on that. But
I thought you could review that any time.
Maybe you can.
Know.
I don't know if you could change it anytime.
Yeah. My big thing with it is the baseline referee called a charge and the sideline referee called a block.
Yeah.
So I think that should go to review regardless.
That should warrant a review. That is true.
If the two referees with the best angles disagree on the call.
Yeah, well, that's like a different argument. Maybe they should just review like every call in the last 2 minutes.
I mean, in all honesty, they should do it at a remote location.
You could even make a rule that, like, in the playoffs, you review every call in the last 2 minutes or something. Because, like, it's pretty important.
But that would be so painful.
You don't want to stop game flow.
You had to stop and review every call. Like,
you could review, like, I'm saying, like, all right, so if you have, like, three refs, you could say, like, if all of them agree, then you're not going to review it. But if one of them is, like, I don't know, then you could review it. Or something like that.
I think the best way to do it is to have, like, people offsite somewhere that are constantly like reviewing stuff like that. Yeah. And if it does need to be reviewed, they don't have to sit there and go stare at a screen for 5 minutes to make a call. But I don't know. I kind of agree with you then, Mark, that just because the two refs with the best angles both had opposite calls, that should maybe warrant a review in general. But I also did see something that apparently they're going to experiment with coaches being able to challenge stuff.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't know how I feel about that either.
I think it would have to be NFL rules where you'd have to have a timeout.
Yeah.
And you'd have to lose the timeout if you lose the challenge.
Can you challenge, like, any time?
I don't know the specifics of it.
Yeah. But, like, I think it would have to be an NFL thing where it's a limited number unless you keep getting them right. And you have to lose the timeout if you get it wrong. Because if not, the coaches just use them as timeouts.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can't just, like, challenge every play to get a free timeout.
Yeah. And, like, what would you consider a review? Like, you can't. I feel like you can't have, like, regular fouls be reviewable. Like, it would have to be, like, blocks, charges, and, like, out-of-bounds calls, right?
Yeah, but I mean...
Like, you can probably do, like, regular fouls.
Because
don't they review all block charges? Well, not all block charges, but they review all out-of-bounds under the last 2 minutes.
Greg, imagine this. Imagine if, like, someone gets kind of slapped on the arm and play continues because they missed the layup, and someone throws the review flag, like...
It'd be terrible.
You can't challenge it if it's live.
Well, then there's no point in it. Calls. Then. So basically, you're only it would be
coaches challenging
that there wasn't a foul. Then the only way that would work.
Well, yeah, you can't challenge like something like was a missed call.
That's what I mean. Like that's what I meant as like common fouls. Like if you thought like somebody got hacked and they didn't, like you're not gonna stop play to review it. Like that would be horrible.
I guess you could only challenge if it was a foul. But I mean that's the same thing in the NFL. You can't challenge like there was a call that you missed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's like more stuff to challenge in the NFL. Like
Also every play ends with a dead ball in the NFL.
Exactly.
But also in the last 2 minutes of the game, like almost every foul is like free throws. So if you're just challenging like, oh, that wasn't a foul or something, you could just...
Yeah, I just feel like that would be super annoying.
You can't give the ball to the other team on... Like, would you do a jump ball off of that? And who would take the jump ball? If you said it was a foul, because you can't just automatically give it to the other team.
Give it to the other team, yeah.
Because what if the team who was shooting is the offensive rebound? Like, you don't know how that's going to shoot.
You don't know how it's going to play. Like, I feel like you can only be able to challenge charge blocks and like out of bounds and stuff. Like I feel like that's it.
Well, Greg, we'll see what they do at the summer league because they're apparently testing it out.
That's where they're testing it out. Apparently.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
All right, we'll see.
But I don't know. So no other takes on officiating. I don't think they have been good, but I'm just sick of people using it as an excuse and trying to like say that the league is like this like weird pro Warriors conspiracy that they want them to win the finals, which one, like that doesn't make any sense to me. Cause I feel like if there was going to be a conspiracy for the league, it would for be the Cavaliers opposite. To win because it would be like a crazy upset, like underdog thing.
Yeah. Or at least make it competitive.
Yeah. I feel like the Cavaliers winning game 7 is a much more compelling storyline for the NBA than the Warriors just routing them in 4 games. Like that doesn't make any sense to me to be their like agenda that they're paying referees to blow the game for the Cavs. Like that doesn't make any sense to me.
Also, if people want to talk about like missed shooting calls on like teams playing the Warriors, I want the refs to call every off-ball foul a team commits on the Warriors. Everyone.
It's just, I promise it's, you. There is some bad missed calls. Like I will agree, but it's like if that's not the reason the Cavaliers are losing these games.
No.
It's not. And that's the reason
the Rockets lost either.
Yeah, I just feel like you're lazy if you blame the refs. You're just lazy.
Mm.
And it's I've always been of the opinion that like teams shouldn't even be in like put themselves in the position for the refs to lose them the game.
Yeah.
Because at that point, like that's not the refs' fault. Like it's your fault for, you know what I mean? I don't know.
I mean, the Cavs are huge underdogs. So
yeah, they are.
You kind of need breaks if you're them. And they didn't get them in game one.
That's like part of the game to me.
I mean, yeah.
Like, sometimes you just don't get calls. Like, and you don't get breaks and stuff doesn't go your way.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know, that's just the way it is. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's the ref blaming stuff just kind of bothers me in general. But
yeah,
what are you going to do? People were going to do it.
Got to have something to blame,
I guess.
Yeah.
And also, I guess none of these people have ever actually reffed basketball, but it's kind of hard.
Oh, it's so hard.
It's really hard.
I reffed intramurals in college. Yeah, that was hard. I could not imagine NBA players.
Yeah.
Dude, that shit was dealing with, like, unathletic white kids. I could not imagine what it's like with, like, these huge dudes running mad fast. That game probably moves so fast. It's probably impossible.
Yeah. Do you know how many times I didn't call a foul?
And, like, I was insane, dude.
I called, like, maybe 10 fouls a game when I refed intramurals.
That would have been high for me, dude.
Yeah, I was, like, one of the refs you called the most fouls.
Oh, yeah. I only called fouls, and it was, like, blatantly obvious somebody got hacked. Like, I usually just let people play.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I ref frat league one semester, and it was the biggest mistake of my life.
Yeah.
They're so intense.
I had people screaming at me legitimately every other game.
Yeah.
I feel like basketball would be so much worse than – because I ref the football. I didn't ref basketball.
Yeah, I ref football too.
But I feel like basketball would be so much worse because there's so many more like ticky-tack fouls.
Yeah,
than in football where it's like already really physical.
Yeah, basketball was way worse than flag football to ref, 100%.
Yeah.
Because the only thing you'd ever have to look for in like flag football is like
pass interference.
Flag guarding was like a thing in us. Like you couldn't like swipe people's hands away when they were reaching for your flag. Like,
oh,
you couldn't. Like,
we just played like touch, I think.
Yeah. We had flags, and like if people were trying to like grab your flag and you were like smacking their arms away, like you couldn't do that. So like that was the hardest thing to call was people doing that kind of stuff. But I mean that still wasn't even too hard. Basketball was way worse. Like it's hard. But I mean the referees I do agree have been not great. But I don't know. I feel like referees are always not great. So
yeah. It's a really fucking hard sport to referee.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not a fan of the blaming referees for losing games. Not a fan. But like I said, even sometimes during game 2, I was like, that was not good. Like when LeBron got tripped by like 3 people on that
one. Oh yeah.
That one play, I was like, I can't believe that was a no call, but I don't know. I guess it happens. I don't know. Do we have anything else then? Anything else on the finals? Mark, where's LeBron James going next year?
Going to LA.
LA. Come on. Nah, man. Sixers fire Brian Colangelo, hired David Griffin.
Yo. He goes
to Philly.
Dude, I'm telling you, the Sixers intentionally did the Brian Colangelo thing to endear themselves to KD.
I love this theory.
Brian
Colangelo's
like, I'm the new guy with burner accounts. Pressure's off you, Durant. If you just come here, no one ever talk about your burner accounts again. Yeah.
No, I actually think people would start talking about Kevin Durant's burner accounts again. I think we would actually make up a name for them because they're both notorious for burner accounts. Like, I actually feel like it would maybe be worse for Kevin Durant if he went there.
Yeah, most people probably forgot about that until the Brian Colangelo thing.
Yeah, wait.
I can't believe they haven't like fired him yet.
I mean, they're doing an investigation now.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't though, because like the draft's in like 2 weeks.
I feel like they're stalling to try and find a replacement. I feel like might be what it is.
Yeah. Because
even if it is his wife, that's still like.
Yeah. If she knew that,
he's
stuff,
still
then, yeah.
giving this information out to her. And he was fully aware of it. Like, because the fact that they told him about 2 of them and then 3 of them shut down, he was the only person notified of this.
Yeah.
He was aware of their existence.
Also, of the 5 accounts where people did the like. Retrieve my password thing.
Yeah, 3 of them had the same number.
3 of them had the same number, which is wife's number, or it has like the same last 2 digits.
The last,
as wife.
last couple digits.
The other 2 have the same last 2 digits as his.
Well, what was the other one that has the last same? Because there's one that he acknowledged was his.
It was his number,
but never tweeted.
Yeah, well,
that was his. Yeah,
and then what was the other one?
That one had his number. Eric Jr. account both had his number. And the other three had his wife's number.
Oh, the sure. Eric Jr. one was the worst too, wasn't it?
I think it was. One of the ones that were tweeting had his number, and the other 3 had his wife. And also like,
so people, one of them was his. Then.
Yeah, people did the like retrieve my email thing, and apparently like one of them was his wife's email, and one of them was like one that started with like BRY and like it had like the same like amount of letters like Brian Colangelo.
No. Jesus.
I love the I love the sleuthing on Twitter though.
The Twitter investigation is wild, dude. Like the people are better at investigating stuff on the internet than like actual people who are supposed to investigate things. Like it's actually ridiculous.
Yeah, why the hell they hire this law firm, dude? Everyone knows what it is now.
Yeah, just literally ask people on Twitter. They have all the evidence you could possibly need. Did you guys listen to that Ringer podcast that came out the next day with Ben Dietrich, who wrote it?
Yeah.
It was, like, actually kind of interesting how it all came, like, to be. It was like, I need to know who was that tipped him off.
Do you buy, like, the whole, it's just, like, some random fan that just, like, saw this?
No.
I don't. I mean, it could be, but I feel like this fan definitely has some inside info.
Yeah.
I refuse to believe some
random fan was like looking at like Sixers like writers' Twitter accounts and being like, this dude comments a lot. He's weird. And there's like multiple that say the same stuff. Like, I don't know. That seems like a lot of work for some like random fan to do.
Well, yeah. I think it was either a writer or someone in the organization. Because one of the Sixers writers tweeted out afterwards, he was like, I mentioned to one of my anonymous sources on the Sixers about Colangelo's, like, that I thought one of the Twitter accounts was someone in the Sixers organization. And they asked if it was, like, Colangelo, and they were like, if you, like, tell anyone, I won't give you any more information.
So this was actually, like, a thing that some people knew about then?
Yes. And okay. Also, like...
So it wasn't, like, this quote-unquote anonymous fan was, like, the only person that was on, like... So this was kind of a thing that was kind of maybe already a thought in, like, the Sixers internet community thing?
Well, between at least two writers and, like, a handful of their sources and, like... So I don't know if maybe, like, one of the writers was like, hey, I think this person might be, like, someone in the Sixers headquarters. And then that their anonymous source went and figured it out or something. But, like... There were definitely people at least somewhat aware of it before now.
Interesting. I'll maintain that. That's probably the weirdest story.
Yeah.
Out of the NBA I've heard in a while.
I think he Twitter found a Hassan Whiteside burner account. Because,
dude, how many players do you think have burner accounts?
I assume a large majority of them. I was going to say, a large majority probably have burner accounts. I mean, they're probably not to the extent of, like, what KD and, like, Brian Colangelo were doing with them. Like, they probably just use Twitter, like, how Brian Colangelo claims he used that one for, where he just, like...
Yeah, even just, like, follow people.
To follow, like, news and stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't think, like, a lot of them are out there actively defending their honor from a burner account on Twitter. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong. Maybe this is a thing that literally every NBA player does. I don't know.
Well, I followed this one member of Heat Twitter. His name's like Chef Trill or something. And he's been tweeting that this like one other member of Heat Twitter is like definitely a Hassan Whiteside burner account. He's like sent like a half dozen tweets about it over like the last year, wherever this guy like gets his mentions for talking shit on Hassan Whiteside. And then right after the Ringer story came out, he went and checked the guy's profile and it was deactivated. So he's factually certain that guy is Hassan Whiteside now.
That's hilarious. Man, what the heck? That's crazy. That like how insecure of a person do you have to be to go out there and actively defend yourself with people on Twitter?
Yeah, I guess I kind of get it because like Colangelo, when everyone's like, why didn't you trade Okafor earlier? He can't be like, it's because he failed a physical. Like,
yeah.
It's actually not my fault. And I think just being able to like blindly yell your truth on Twitter might do something for some people to be like, at least like,
I guess
I like, told somebody.
Do you have to do it on Twitter? Like get a journal, dude, like get a diary or something. Just write it down. Like,
but I don't think wrong with you. I don't think you get the same relief as anonymously yelling at someone on the internet who's criticizing you for something that's not your fault.
I guess. I mean, I guess I kind of see it, but at the same time, I don't know. That's weird.
Yeah, I can see it, but you just you're in that, even like a player is fine, like whatever, if you're just like saying it's not my fault or something, like you're just a player. But when you're like a GM, like you can't be giving that information out.
Yeah, exactly. You can't be doing that stuff as a front office guy.
Like, yeah, that's much worse.
Yeah, I guess so, because I mean, he was trashing the players on his team, like
the coaching staff too. And stuff, like,
yeah.
Like, if you're just doing what KD did, where he's just like, oh, like, tweeting about, like, how you're not actually, you're better than, or something, or, like, it's, like, not that big of a deal, but it's just kind of funny.
Yeah. Kevin Durant is more hilarious. Funny. Brian Colangelo's is more, like,
serious.
This guy is actually, like, doing weird stuff. Kevin Durant was just defending himself. Like, Brian Colangelo was, like, actively, like, disparaging his like, coworkers and stuff. Like,
yeah.
Which just looks way worse. But we have anything else? Are we good?
I think we're good.
Yeah. All right. I guess we got to try. Next time Marshall is free, we'll have to talk about the Kanye album. Because I don't really want to talk about it right now without Marshall. Because Marshall's like the biggest Kanye fan out of all of us. Or was, at least. And I don't want to talk about it without him. And I want to have like a full conversation about it whenever we talk about it.
So we'll do that. I'm actually really excited to talk about it.
So am I, actually. But I don't know. Well, I guess is that it then? Are we good?
I think we're good.
All right, cool. Well, this was the Deceptively Athletic Podcast. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and give us a rating and review if you do feel inclined to do so. For Mark Tchaikovsky and Greg Stefanik, I am Tony Romello. Peace.
Peace.
Deuces.
Great, cool. Yeah, we're not doing the quick chill segment?
I hate you.
Boston, we don't do quick chill segments.
We do 2-hour deep dives or nothing.
Bossman, I drop a podcast under my burner Twitter account. That's deep in NHL Twitter.